Case of United States against Easterling. Ms. Christensen.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Joanna Christensen and I represent the appellant, Christopher Easterling, in this case. Mr. Easterling qualifies for a reduction in his guideline range under Amendment 821. This is his second appeal. During the first appeal, it went back and his guideline range was lowered from 141 to 155 months to 84 to 105 months. The district court did impose the same sentence both times, 239 months. The extent of the deviation the first time was 84 months above the guideline range, the second time that became 134 months. At this point, Mr. Easterling's sentence is 152 months higher than the guideline range. In United States versus Claiborne, this court sent back a case that was pending on appeal where the defendant qualified for an 821 amendment, finding that it was appropriate to send it back for resentencing unless it was apparent from the sentencing hearing that the judge would have imposed the same sentence. Of course, the government's argument is that the judge imposed the same sentence twice, so we should just conclude at this point that it would be that sentence. That's not the case here. The district court did not say at sentencing, if the guideline range changed, I would impose the same sentence. And the oral pronouncement controls. The judge did check the box on the statement of reasons, which this court has found problematic in several cases in the past, because there's no additional findings about what that means on the statement of reasons.
Didn't the judge also talk about the 3553A factors and how they justified sentence and how it was going to be an above guideline sentence and really focused on the 3553 factors?
The judge did discuss some of the 3553A factors and missed a couple. The court said nothing had changed, and while certain factors had not changed, of course, the nature and circumstances of the offense and Mr. Easterling's background, other things had changed, which the court did not put significant consideration into, particularly the guideline range. The guideline range had changed significantly and now has changed again. And without the concept of considering the guideline range in making that huge above guideline sentence, this is an unreasonable sentence. It was an unreasonable sentence at the sentencing prior. At this point, it's even more unreasonable because of the change in the guidelines. So that was the primary, did not consider the change in the guidelines, which is one of the 3553A factors. The court has to consider the guidelines. So the court also didn't consider that there was no longer a 924C, and that meant no longer a consecutive sentence. The court essentially doubled that 924C sentence the first time and then kept it in place when he was no longer convicted of it. That's a significant reduction and a significant amount of time that's taken away. Now, while she, of course, could impose the same sentence, it's below the statutory range, the sentence should account for the changes in the guidelines, or the judge should at least consider it. So by not offering additional reasons for the extent of the deviation, the district court imposed an unreasonable sentence.
But do we even need to get to substantive reasonableness for a remand in your view?
No, which is why I discussed the Claiborne issue first, mm-hmm. is that if we look at that issue solely, mm-hmm. that warrants a remand in this case. And in Claiborne, there was no discussion about whether the sentence was reasonable prior to Amendment 821. And the court actually says, listen, this is not an error. The district court didn't commit an error because the district court didn't know. So it's not an error per se. The substantive reasonableness is kind of to combat the idea that the judge would in fact pose the same sentence, because in Claiborne that's a little clearer than it is in this case. The government,
of course, here we have the district court saying this sentence needs to be at or near the statutory max. And that, of course, will not change the statutory max. So how should that figure into our consideration about whether she might, whether she was trying to say she would impose the same sentence even if the guidelines changed?
I think even if the statutory max is the same, the court still needs to consider a change in the guidelines. And that's under the 3553A. That still has to be a consideration. If the court again says, I still think it's a you know, near to statutory max sentence in this case, that's within her discretion. That has to be justified significantly more at this point. Because even now, that's an 18-month difference in the deviation upwards. And that, of course, requires the higher level of discussion about the factors and justification for that. And I will also note that the statutory maximum had changed for the second resentencing hearing because the 924C 84-month went away. And that meant, so that's the mandatory minimum, the maximum was life. So the maximum on 924C was life. So the statutory maximum also changed. But the primary portion is the judge must consider the guidelines, and the guidelines are significantly lower. I will note the government has suggested a Palladino remand, which this court has done in other cases similar to it. Curitin is the one that we cited in our briefs about a Palladino remand would be more appropriate if it's unclear. And that is not something we're opposed to, although we believe under Claiborne a full resentencing would be appropriate. Unless the court has further questions at this point, I'll reserve the rest of my time. Mm-hmm.
Certainly, counsel. Ms. Ruppert.
Good morning, Your Honors. Laura Ruppert on behalf of the United States. May it please the court and counsel. A remand and resentencing based upon Amendments 821 and 825 is not necessary where the record, the totality of the record, makes clear that the district court would have imposed the same sentence even if Amendment 821 had been in effect.
How can we tell that a district judge would have imposed the same sentence when the amendment postdates the judge's decision? I don't see how a judge can say, nothing the commission will do will ever matter to me. Right? If you read the judge as saying that there's just nothing the sentencing commission could do that would ever shake her view, that sounds like a legal error. I don't see how you can announce on date one that I am going to ignore anything the commission does next month.
I appreciate that, Judge. Of course, no district court has a crystal ball as to what amendments might get proposed after the fact of sentencing. But I do think that one of the things that has been touched upon today are comments that the court made at the resentencing hearing about the statute.
Right. The comments suggest that the judge is probably not going to be easily persuaded to reduce this sentence. But what we have to worry about is, has the judge set up something that forecloses the possibility that her mind can ever be affected by what the Sentencing Commission does in the future? And I would think if a judge actually said that, we would view that so much an evidence of prejudice in the sense of pre-judgment that we would send the case to a different judge. Right? Why shouldn't we just send this back and we'll see what the district judge thinks?
Well, I appreciate that, Judge. But again, I do think that the concerns that this court had in Claiborne, that the record in its totality shows that the district court thought that on the remand for resentencing, considering the breadth of the 3553A factors, considering the guidelines, concluded that a sentence at the top of the statutory maximum for count one was appropriate in this case. And it acknowledged the criminal history of the defendant in this case. It acknowledged the two prior robbery convictions, other juvenile adjudications, in concluding that a 239-month sentence remained appropriate.
Where, I hear you specifically referencing totality of the circumstances, but our case law requires an unambiguous statement that references the contested guideline issue. And here, it's not a contested guideline issue, as Judge Easterbrook has explained. It was a guideline issue that had not even been created yet.
And that was the same set of circumstances for Claiborne. So in Claiborne, where the amendments had been proposed after Claiborne had been sentenced, while it was on direct appeal, and this court said that there was nothing in the record indicating that the district court would have imposed the same sentence regardless of the applicable guidelines range. And it also said further, unless it was apparent from the sentencing hearing that the judge would have imposed the same sentence, even if the amendment had been enforced, we would remand the case. But I think that's where we take these two different sentencing hearings and we see what the court did in each of those sentencing hearings, combine it with the statement of reasons that accompanied each of those judgments, where it said that notwithstanding, if there was any error in the guidelines range, it would have imposed the same sentence. And when you pair those two things with the district court statement at the resentencing hearing, that on count one, a sentence near the statutory maximum was appropriate in this case based upon the nature and circumstances of the offense, based upon the history and characteristics of the defendant, it full well knew what the defendant's criminal history was. It knew about the two prior robbery convictions and the full breadth of the history of criminality. And in looking at that and understanding what the guidelines were, how they shook out in this case, the difference is removing those two status points for committing the offense while on a criminal justice sentence or while on parole. And the court talked about that in terms of the nature and circumstances of the offense, found that to be an aggravating factor. And so I think when you take all of this together, the totality of the record, specifically those two forms that accompanied the statement of reasons saying, I would have selected this sentence notwithstanding an error in the guidelines, and when you pair that with the court's statement that a sentence should be at the top of the statutory maximum, that makes it apparent that notwithstanding the fact that these amendments were proposed a couple months after the fact, she would have imposed the same sentence. And so we would submit that a remand is not necessary in this case, a full resentencing based upon 28 United States Code 2106, that the entire record makes clear she would have imposed that same sentence. Going to the substantive reasonableness of this sentence, the district court did not abuse its discretion in sentencing the defendant to 239 months imprisonment. Sentencing judges have the discretion over how much weight to give every 3553A factor, and it's clear from both of the sentencing hearings that this court placed a great weight on the nature and circumstances of the offenses, the history and characteristics of the appellant, and what would protect the public from further crimes of this particular defendant. It stressed the nature and circumstance of this offense, that he went in, he brandished a firearm to the loan clerk that was working at that Walgreens. She fled in absolute fear. The victim impact statement that was presented at both the original sentencing and the resentencing hearing, that clerk described the absolute immense anxiety that she felt after this crime occurred, that she rarely slept restfully, she had to be put on blood pressure medication, that she needs to stand with her back to the wall to be able to assess who's coming into the store. The court stressed that he did this while absconding from parole, and did so with having two prior robbery convictions. So in stressing the nature and circumstances of these offenses, the history and characteristics of the defendant, that this 239-month sentence was not an abuse of discretion. It was not fundamentally wrong or arbitrary or fanciful, which is what an abuse of discretion is. So the court had every right and the power to reject the guidelines in this case, and she did so. And to pick up on a point, yes, the district court did say nothing had changed, but she was referring to, yes, the nature and circumstances of these offenses and the history and characteristics of the defendant. The district court did acknowledge the change in the guidelines. In fact, she stated as she was re-pronouncing sentence, so I previously rejected the advice of the commission, and I do so again today, albeit in a greater amount, but emphasizing that nothing with respect to the nature and circumstances of this offense or the history and characteristics have changed. And so the court recognized what the new guidelines range was, but rejected that advice and determined that 239 months was an appropriate sentence in this case. If there are no further questions, we would respectfully ask that this case not be remanded because the district court would have selected the same sentence. We respectfully ask this court to affirm the sentence of the district court.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Christensen?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I will note that there is a 3582 pending. So either way, the court is going to have to reconsider this. And if this court affirms, it's essentially saying, putting a thumb on a scale on the judge's use of discretion in this Amendment 821 proceeding. So essentially, the district court judge has made the guidelines irrelevant, which is impermissible under the statute. And the guidelines are the start of every sentencing hearing. The guidelines have changed. That's been made retroactive. And this court should remand to have the district court consider that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Garden.